plate a potential nugget.
We were speaking before we started the podcast conversation. What's the you spoke about leadership in an open system versus leadership in a closed system. I'm curious about what's the crux of the distinction? In what ways is leadership in an open system different from leadership in a closed system, which is how a lot of the, let's say, a typical listed company or a corporation, I guess, is a closed system. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
So how is leadership in that context different from leadership in an open system? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
It goes to the nature of leadership. Let's keep that in mind, that we can think of leaders as those people who are on top. We normally, the person on top, we call them the leaders just because they happen to be on top. The person who has the most power, the ability to wield more power over others, leader, dada. The person who's got the most wealth, well, how many billions of dollars. So they are like corporate leaders and therefore leaders of the world, you know, are leaders. And all these wealth gives you the ability to reward others, to tempt others to come and join you because you could reward them. So you get easier control over the decisions that others make. If you have a power by authority, like you are the dictator of the country, yeah, you can frighten people to follow you. And we think of these people like the autocrats as great leaders too, but that's the source of their power is fear and threat, or it is money and temptations, the source of their power. And sometimes mere position could be, but then after a while, people see through it. Like president of India is big position, but unless the president wields some budget giving to you power or threatening through the police power, I mean, I can ignore and just a nice figurehead. So these two, having power over people and having the wealth to reward people, are the instruments that are used by chief executives in corporations. Okay? In corporations, it's not that people appoint them, choose them to be their chief executive. Someone above drops them in and says, well, the board has chosen this as a chief executive. It's like the whole Chinese model that the king is descended from heaven and the people have to suffer this king because he's sent from heaven. Whereas, I say, in an open system, leadership has to emerge and the leader must acquire the right to lead from the people. And exercise that power not through authority over the people through and also budget giving and money rewarding powers over the people. So in an open system, people are all like in a chaotic situation and you must get followership and thus become the leader. And to remain a good leader, always capable of leading in that open system as it changes, you mustn't get overused to using your authority power, because those muscles otherwise become the strong ones. And the other muscles, if you had them and you weren't, you know, God-given, planted as a leader, will atrophy.
And maybe just persisting with this, Arun, several companies, even traditional corporations now, have to depend on other ecosystems which lie outside the boundaries of your company. Even if we look at the corporate world, while it's run by the board or owned by the shareholders, they're often displaying open systems type dynamics, if you will. So again, in your experience from a transitioning perspective, how does a CEO of today, of let's say 2018, in what ways is that CEO different from, let's say, the CEO of, let's say, 2000, about maybe two decades back, roughly? And for somebody who's grown up in a different paradigm, who's sort of exercised the same set of muscles, how does one recalibrate? You know, what's been your observation about, you know, what people could bear in mind as they move from one paradigm to the other, as the world shifts towards possibly more and more of open systems type value chains?
Absolutely. You know, in the early 1990s, a bunch of business school deans in the United States did their triannual survey together. They used to do it collaboratively to find what are the issues and challenges on the minds of chief executives of the largest companies around the world, United States, Europe, Japan, Australia, and so on. From that collective research, these challenges would then be in the pot for, you know, whichever business school did the best in finding the solutions. I mean, you market yourself, but
sure.
It was a very good way of doing it, a collaborative way amongst them. And then they competed thereafter. So that survey in the 1990s, when they found what were the challenges from these 100 odd organizations, and there was one Indian organization who was part of that survey that was the Birla Group actually at that year, were the one, but everybody else was everywhere else. It came to this that they said, these people, that we are into a more open world.
In the 90s.
I'm talking early 90s. We are a much more open world. And in this world, we need to partner with or work with organizations who are in other parts of the world. And also we are finding, because of, as you said, the world is more dynamic, and information technology even then is enabling us to be in communicating with partners outside our boundaries, how to be successful in a more open world, in a more networked world, is our challenge. We need to be global, in the big word, and local at the same time. We need to reward individual excellence, because it's a belief that, you know, unless individuals are noticed and rewarded, it's not a good organization. At the same time, we want to foster teamwork. It looks like opposite things. Mm-hmm. We want to be more innovative, yeah, because, you know, in a changing world, innovation. At the same time, for efficiency, everything must be standard and done in the routine. They're opposite things. So this was the dilemma, that we need to have opposites. Local, global, innovate, standardize, be efficient, individual excellence, teamwork. And there were a few other similar dilemmas. So the question was, how do you organize yourself to have both?
Right.
Whether you make choices and say, we shall not be in innovation, we shall just execute efficiently. Or we shall be only innovative, and then you realize that you can't scale and you continue to invent things and so on. And the solutions that, for example, the pharmaceutical companies have, as also the large IT companies had, is that the innovations happen outside and then they buy them out. Okay, and then you're part of the big machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you use it efficiently and spread it around in big reach. And those people who are the innovators there, they leave, they take the money and go away. Or if they join in you, they get highly frustrated and they cause trouble for you, so you get them out also. So a model of organizing for one side of those dilemmas is available. A model for organizing on the other side of the dilemmas is also available, means be small, entrepreneurial, and so. How can you be both at the same time? And so we said it's in the concept of how you organize, create both things, lead and so on, and reward and so on. So we understood through that research, and this is where Innovation Associates, my being with them was helping a lot, as also Arthur Little being a technology firm, that the learning organization, which is the metaphor that is very helpful, is organizations themselves need to learn how to create a concept of organizing which is going to suit a world which has now changed. And what is this concept of organizing that was appearing was an organization which was built on lateral links, not on vertical hierarchies. So you don't divide your organization into, you know, either functional specialities or business units, which was the matrix idea. And when you do that, then getting collaboration between the business units and between the functions, and between the functions and the business units, makes a big khichdi of it. Because the heads of all of these, whether they are the heads of business units or the heads of functions, are leading their teams in the same way.
Right.
It's authority. And so you get these cocks, then, you know, showing off vis-a-vis each other in front of the CEO about who's done the best amongst them all. And so that's the culture throughout. You know, show up. Because yes, you should show up and be rewarded for it, so right through. So if you change it, and everyone is looking for partners inside the organization, with whom can I collaborate to get the results that he and she, as well as I, want? So we came to some terrific insights after doing some research with these organizations that were trying to go this way, and those others that seem to have succeeded better, that unless an organization developed the culture internally of, if I would call the world almost servant leadership, at least facilitative leadership, and not big shot on the cover of the magazine leadership, the organization wasn't a good partner of others. So surveys done by with other organizations, who's the best big organization that you like to collaborate with and enjoy collaborating with, showed this up. That those organizations whose internal culture was based on one model of leadership, which was the authority model, vertical model of leadership, weren't very good at working with partners outside. So you got to make a change in yourself to succeed in this world. And it comes to like personally change yourself, change your organization, then you're able to swim more comfortably in a much more open world.
Got it. Couple of things struck me here. One is that in an open system, horizontal people leadership, which is the ability to form alliances and relationships within and outside the organization, is likely to be a bigger virtue than vertical people leadership, which is the ability to get things done with the team under you, where you often have authority and control. The second piece that struck me was that leadership is often a tightrope with opposing forces pulling you in different directions. Arun talks about individual excellence versus teamwork, efficiency versus innovation. I guess there are a few more. Decisiveness versus being democratic, hands-on versus delegating, and so on. I guess at some level, leadership is also about being comfortable with the various points in the spectrum and adapting one style based on the context and staying nimble over time. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.